Welcome to Buzzed with Brian. I am your host, Brian. We're going to talk about beer, the history, and drinking. Hey there, beer fans. Welcome back to another episode of Buzz with Brian. Thanks for tuning in this week and every week. Always happy to have you here listening in. This week is a special episode. Of course, there's going to be some beer involved, but the special part is what goes well with beer. Well, you're going to find out is a delicious meat treat here, some sausage, and I have the king of knowledge when it comes to this subject matter. We're talking Landjager today. I have Jesse Brookstein with me. He has written a book on this. He's been in the industry. He knows a lot of ins and outs, and I'm just really excited, Jesse, to have you on. Thank you so much.
I am very excited to be here, brother. We've been talking for about literally a year and a half, maybe longer, to try to make this connection happen.
That feels right, yeah.
Two ships in the night a lot of times. So, yeah, man, thanks so much for having me on.
Of course.
I think you do a great job.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I'm excited to learn more about this today. I think for people that don't, maybe aren't as familiar with the Landjager, what that all is, they might have noticed some little tiny wood huts popping up in their favorite drinking holes, whether it's a beer bar, brewery, or, you know, whatever.
Yep.
And there's a couple little tiny meat treats hanging there on the rack, and it's that's what we're going to talk about today. So if you have the visual in your mind, great. Hold on to that and get ready to learn some more facts.
Right, man. Yeah, it's funny, I think, and we'll get to it, but I think that display case is a big part of the reason why Landjager is so special. If it were vacuum packed or hidden away in a cooler, maybe just on a menu only, maybe it wouldn't elicit so much excitement. But it's sitting here in a Swiss chalet inspired wooden case.
Exactly.
Usually in this town, built down in New Glarus by a sausage maker / woodworker named Heinz. So you see meat, you see it hanging, you say, only in Wisconsin do I see meat that's not refrigerated and cheese that's not refrigerated, but
exactly.
That's how we do.
Very authentic.
That's how we do. So, yeah.
But before we get into the meat, let's switch back onto beer. This is a beer podcast, after all. Jesse, what do we have picked out here? What are we drinking?
Oh, my gosh, my friend. We got some of that there half-acre reef knot.
Okay, yeah.
That I've been kind of staring down on the social meds. Mm-hmm. Killer branding.
Absolutely.
Just bright eye-catching.
It really is. And I think Half Acre, for people that aren't familiar, you know, great Illinois brewery. I think they do a wonderful job. I have not been disappointed yet by any of their beers.
It's nice to have a brand you can trust. It's I guess, always interesting. It's often discussed how the seasonality of these beers has changed, and we're seeing a summer sipper middle of March.
Oh, yeah.
Weather kind of makes it feel like it should be out right now,
yes.
But it maybe shouldn't, but I get it.
We're hopeful.
Yeah. But no, I'm super excited to read about this beer online, find out it had a nice bitter note to it, and I think it's not too over the top, but it's there. It's
definitely
a nice kiss on the back end of it. So
definitely, because I think the base style, it feels, we talked about this before we hopped on, but the base style feels like it's a Helles lager.
Yep.
And it, absolutely, it has that nice balance of a little bit of hop bitterness coming from like a true, more German style lager beer on back end.
Mm-hmm. And what better place than here at Barley Pop?
Yes, yeah. Give a shout out to Barley Pop.
That's our
recording studio for the night. So.
It is. We got our boy Tone Bone back behind the bar slinging that 18, 19 year old Cheds.
That's right. 18 year old white cheddar.
He told us to get a nibble before the show, but we didn't want to mess with our palate.
Of course not.
You know, unique New York, right? We had to keep that going. And so, shout out to Brandon and Jason for creating such a great spot here in the Atwood area.
Yes.
Come here probably more than the wife would like, but
that's okay. She doesn't have to.
She's usually here too, let's be honest.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm excited. Let's get into today's show.
Done.
I'm ready to kick this one off. Jesse, I hope you're ready as well.
I am.
And, you know, we're in Barley Pop. It's a place that sells beer. So speaking of beer, you know, I heard that you had your start in that industry. Tell me about that.
Yes, sir. Beer is in my bones.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably why we ultimately cross paths, even though it might come across as a sausage thing, and it's very much a sausage thing. I think it goes back to just how much I love talking with people in the beer and bar industry and being a part of it.
I
think Madison's a great town for it. And so I guess my relationship with beer goes back to, you know, my teens where I'm drinking it. But then in 2001, I started working at a beer distributorship in upstate New York.
Okay.
It was a really big one in our area. A lot of kids from my hometown worked at it. And I realized really quickly how cool it was to, like, work in an industry selling a product I liked and I cared about. Up until that, I had worked at sporting stores or a place called the Jolly Butcher in Clinton, New York, that, you know, slinging sandwiches.
Yep.
So maybe that subconsciously is partly why I love sausages as well, you
sure.
know?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember, like, saying to people at age 20, like, man, it's so neat. Like, I can, like, bring beer home. I guess they weren't supposed to, but at 20, it's upstate New York. It's a lot like Wisconsin where you start drinking at 15, you know?
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and I kind of went from a night crew to a delivery guy driving trucks to, you know, doing merchandising.
Okay.
And realized not only do I just like beer and blacking out on Old Milwaukee, but I love craft beer.
Yes.
And so we're lucky in the Utica area, where I'm from is Clinton, New York, to have a brewery called FX Matt Brewing Company,
okay.
who makes Saranac.
Ah,
and,
yes.
And Utica Club. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to write a book about them someday because they're incredible. I mean, they're steins, Schultz and Dooley, were so popular back in the day. They had a slot in the TV guide as to what time these commercials would be on. They're the first brewery to ever put out a mixed 12-pack. They're the creators of the beer ball. So they have, like...
Beer ball?
Yes.
What was
a little plastic keg.
Okay.
That had its, like, own specific tap. It was really popular, I think, in, like, you know, dorms and frats in that era.
Was it already carbonated?
It was carbonated and filled.
Ready to go. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, that's why we should write the book, you know? So it was them that I first had my, you know, first Belgian wit and all these other beers that they were making. Their mixed 12er was 12 different beers. It was like, when you're just getting into beer and you're reading these descriptions of 12 different beers on the side of the box, like, that is insane. Like, I still understand that euphoria. I remember stealing it from my mom's boyfriend and, like, cracking over the tops to take a sip, just not even to get drunk. Just, I was like, oh, I really want to try this winter wazzle.
Flavor is, yeah.
And then, believe it or not, he found out that I did it and he was pissed. I was like, how did he know? So I was so excited about craft beer. I'd also spent a little time in Europe and realized how incredible the beers were over there. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out to Brewery Omegang in spring of 2005, and I started doing kind of an internship there that summer of 2005.
Okay, cool.
Beautiful grounds, but it was about an hour away from where I lived. I didn't have a lot of money at the time, didn't pay very well, so it was a beautiful experience. I always enjoy going back. It really helped me solidify my love of craft beer, but it was just unrealistic.
Yeah.
So, had some friends in Colorado that said, it's sunny here all the time, and coming from upstate New York, you don't really see the sun very much. And I was like, bullshit, that doesn't exist. And sure enough, it did. So I drove out there with some buddies in 06. And started working at a brewery called Twisted Pine, early 07.
Okay.
And then, really life-changing, I started working at brewery Avery Brewing.
Avery, that's a big name.
Avery, yeah. They were just head and shoulders at the time, like the one you wanted to work for, you know?
Yeah.
So I fought really hard to get in that spot. There was 12 people at the time when I started, including Adam Avery and his dad, Larry.
Okay.
Just kind of... cleaning kegs,
sure.
working
just
on the bottling line.
Utility guy.
I thought I wanted to brew. Mm-hmm. Everybody does.
Yeah.
I realized really quickly I didn't. I actually really loved packaging.
Okay.
I love the camaraderie. When things are going well, you're like doing some ass slapping. You got the music playing. you're stacking cases. You're wrapping them. It was just like I really enjoyed that team aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or when things are going terribly, you there's a camaraderie there. You team up. You help things out, you know? So I decided I kind of wanted to stay in packaging. So my career there materialized. About 3 years into my career at Avery, we started the packaging department itself. And by the time I left there, about 6.5 years after starting, there was 13 people alone in the packaging department. and about 150 employees. So I got to watch that that growth from
huge growth.
12 people to 150. And by the time months, you know, after I left and they opened the new facility, I think they peaked around 200 or something like that.
That's incredible.
So crazy growth, 60% kind of growth. But back to what you could do in beer in the mid-2000s to 2010s before things started changing, you know?
Definitely.
So at that time, me and a couple buddies from Avery, John Cross and Chris Bell, we decided to leave, and we opened a brewery in Denver, which opened in July 2015, called Call to Arms Brewing Company.
Call to Arms, okay.
It's really funny to say right now, but back then, when you're writing a business plan in 2013, it was very not common for brewers to leave breweries and open breweries.
Their own,
it sounds silly,
but
it wasn't that common. At that time, Comrade had just opened. Those were some dry dock guys. The Spangolang guys were open, and they came from Great Divide. Little brewery that maybe you've heard of called Beershot was opening at the same time.
That place is magical.
Magical.
I had a chance to go there, and oh, God, I was in love.
It's love. Yeah. It's an adult playground with some of the best lagers in America, right?
Yes.
We had all kind of gotten our, well, us Call to Arms guys had gotten our mentorship from the folks at Cannonball Creek, who just never not win medals. Every GABF, I think they've won a medal since they opened.
Just
and
perennial.
Like golds, too.
Yeah.
So fuck you, Hutch, for always winning medals. But they really held our hands and like walked us through the process. And we ended up doing events with them, Peace and Assist events, where we tried helping other breweries out. It was a special, magical time in the craft beer scene. We were like, screw you to all the cease and desists that were going on in the industry. We ended up helping Zach Nichols at Cellar West.
Yep.
We did a Peace and Assist with him one of the years, and that really forged our friendship.
Yep.
So, it was this really great time. And 2017 rolled around. Things start changing. I had been with Call to Arms for a year, two and a half years. Denver's changing a lot, kind of what we're seeing now in Madison. Rent prices going up, housing prices is going up. Meanwhile, your paycheck's not really changing because you're owning a business.
Yep.
So we moved here. A couple of reasons. Wife got a postdoctorate position here. I love Madison. I've been here a couple times.
Okay.
Love it more and more every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Meet new great people every single day. And I started working at Work and Draft.
Yeah.
And those guys are still so near and dear to my heart. Did about 15 months there at Work and Draft.
So you were there like kind of at the start of Work and Draft.
Started, my first day was 2 weeks after they opened.
They opened, yeah, wow.
Doing all their marketing, doing their social media, bartending, wholesale and distribution at the time.
Yep.
So it was cool because like I got to do all the things I was doing at Call to Arms, but without the added stressor of being the owner.
Right.
So I was able to focus more on the social. I was able to focus more on the marketing and the event planning rather than getting pulled in every direction because the dumpster got taken or because there's a vendor coming to try sell hops to you when you're in the middle of, there's just so many things going on, you know?
Yep.
It was awesome. Clint's one of the greatest brewers I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Before we started this podcast, we were hyping him up. So, I left the beer scene about 2019.
Okay.
I would absolutely be in a part of it, but at that time I was ready to maybe tackle a little something different. Started working for the state. I worked at the Wisconsin Union doing marketing for...
That's a switch up, yeah.
It was, but you know, it's funny.
It's, fun.
It's like, I thought it would be a big change, but like, when the union's funny. It's very down to earth and very humble. So even though it's this big organization, it still like feels very small businessy in the way it's run.
Totally.
And so doing marketing for them. And then I had this idea. When I moved here, I said, what are all these Landjager hanging around town? And I had grown up in upstate New York, as I said, and my uncle lived in Albany, New York, and there's a place there called Rolf's Pork Store. And this place is just old school, like heart of Albany, badass meat shop, you know? So, like the owner tells it how it is, and you get your Landjager, which to this day is still some of the best I've ever had, and you get out, you know? But my uncle would always bring it to our family gatherings growing up.
Okay.
And then when I moved to Colorado, he would ship it out. And so it was just this, it almost became this like thing between us, even though it was just a meat stick. It was just something he always got.
Definitely.
And so being a dork, I'm going to the old fashioned. I'm going to New Glarus Brewing. I'm going to Hosley. I'm going to Stalzi's. And there's these Lonjager things laying around. And I'm like, what makes each one different? Why does that one look that way? Is that one from the same place? And so I started looking into it, asking the questions.
Yeah.
And what I found was even in 2019, on the World Wide Web, there was barely any information on Lonjager.
What a shame.
And what information I could find was very obviously copy and pasted from one website to the other, right?
Sure.
Or just like a recipe, or they say, it's a meat snack that's good for hiking, you know?
Thanks.
I was like, no, this is, we need to know more about this. And so at that time, I had kind of traveled around, gone down to Zuber's and Monroe, obviously Hosley, Roof's when it was open in New Glarus, Bavaria Sausage, all the places. And I said, my New Year's resolution, 2020, I'm going to write a book about the history of Lonjager in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And that was the goal. And so I started kicking ass, like January through March, I was getting all these interviews done.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with all these folks in the region. Dennis Hosley at Hosley Meats turned me on to Gempler's in Monticello.
Okay.
I met with him. Things were going so good.
These
and
are
then,
like sausage makers, butchers, like that's who
you're
talking to.
I was only talking to Lonjager producers and Heinz Mottman, who used to make Lonjager. But now makes the display cases for us and is basically the de facto mayor of New Glarus. If you've ever been to New Glarus and you've seen the two men playing the elk horn down there, he's one of those guys.
Okay.
He knows everybody. He's the sweetest person in the whole world.
Okay.
And so met with all these folks, and then this thing happened in like March 2020.
Yeah.
For everything.
COVID, I think. Was that
that's
what,
it. That's right. Yeah. And so
just a pandemic.
This fucking horrible pandemic came. And so what I found was meat butchers, meat producers are a lot like brewers. They really like hanging out in the background. They like when you go to a brewery, you'll typically see five brewers back by the brew house, keeping to themselves. They're very introverted. They don't want to do talks. They don't want to go to events. They just want to like discuss like what level of decoction they're doing or whatever.
All these fun things. Hops are going to use for
right.
this or that. Yeah.
Right. So it wasn't until I sat down with these meat guys, these Lonjager makers, that I really started to like bond with them, because they were like, what do you want? They're actually really secretive about their spices in particular.
Okay. It's not protected information.
They are. Yeah. That's the one thing I'd say is different than beer, is like they don't really share a lot.
Okay.
And I think they deal with more stuff regulation-wise.
Sure.
I often say that if brewers had to go through what meat producers have to go through, there'd probably be like a third of the breweries there are now. Because, for example, Dennis Hosley, I'll just tell a quick story here. Dennis Hosley has been making Lonjager since 1983.
Wow.
And I went there a few months ago, and they had to put their case away because a new inspector came in and said, you can't have this meat out, it's got to be refrigerated.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, here's the thing, like I've been doing this for decades, I actually kind of like helped write the book on this. And they're like, nope, you got to put it away. Mm-hmm. So like even, it's a lot of new inspectors out there, for better or for worse, it's just jobs are changing.
Right.
And so these guys, not only do they have to deal with the day to the day, but they also have to like have an office sometimes for these inspectors. They really have to go through a lot of hoops to make these people happy.
Yeah.
So I got all this info from these folks, and I said, well, I can't keep researching this because we couldn't leave our houses, and I didn't want to do these interviews over the phone.
Right.
So
it's
I used. It's not the same.
It's not as intimate. You can't, you know, pull as much information. That's what I find.
You got to sit them down, you know? Yeah. If they're on their phone, they're going to be pulled in every direction, you know? Mm-hmm. So I used that time to drive around the state to research. That's the other thing is these meat shops don't have shit for SEO. And, like, they don't have websites, a lot of them. They have, like, a Facebook page, maybe, that hasn't been updated for 6 years. So you're, like, trying to find these Lonjager producers around the state. you're just getting the same results. Or you're not. So I literally started looking at maps and being like, Colby, Wisconsin, Lon Jägermaker, boom, there's a hit.
Yep.
You know, Darlington, no hit. You know, like little townships all throughout the state. And as we drove, I would literally be in my car, in and out of service. Is there a Lon Jäger in this area? And the wife's like, no, we're not. You know, it used to be we used to stop at breweries along the way, and I'm like, can we stop and see if they got Lon Jäger? But what I found was, after doing this, to this day, I would say the number probably sits around 50 producers in Wisconsin probably make what they call Lon Jäger.
Okay.
That's my guesstimate.
Yep.
I would say anywhere between 40 to 60 is a good guess. And I think there's, well, I was just talking to the folks at DACAP, one of the state fed agencies, about this today, but there's hundreds of producers in town, at least 300. I want to say upwards of 500.
Wow.
But that might range from like a mobile slaughtering unit to a federally inspected facility to like a smaller facility, like a Meat People or something like that. So I don't have a specific number. I'm still waiting for that email to come back. But what I found was so many of these places are making what they call Lon Jäger, but not anything like what you find in Greene County. We rarely came in a display case. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can think of two or three off the top of my head out of the other 30 plus that I've seen came in a display case.
Yep.
They rarely came in pairs. Sometimes they were another meat snack altogether, like a cousin of Lon Jäger, say like a Polish Cabanos.
Oh, yeah. I just had a Cabanos down at Dovetail in Chicago.
Exactly.
Yes. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
So there's a place in this state that basically has that and calls it Lon Jäger.
Yep.
It's delicious. It's not Lon Jäger.
Yep.
There's places that I had basically a meat stick that just used Lon Jäger seasoning. So between not coming in as a pair, being kind of all over the place, being quality level, you can't necessarily judge quality level because no one, who's to say what's best?
Right.
Right? It's very subjective. But I, at the end of the day, it wasn't even a cop-out. What I really went back and forth was, I think I have a story in Greene County. Mm-hmm. I think I've got all I need for a book because they all have the display cases. They're all family-owned. They're all doing it in this proper rectangular-shaped way. So I dove in on Greene County.
Okay.
And that's where a book about one esoteric sausage snack in one of 72 counties in Wisconsin came to life.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be like 20 pages. It ended up being 140 pages. The pictures help.
Yeah, but
you know,
still, that's an incredible amount of content on just one niche sausage.
About one sausage.
Yeah.
And so that kind of parlayed itself into just doing events, slinging the eggs, as we say. The idea was, I will sell my book at this event, and I'll sell some Lon Jäger to bait people in and just, you know, educate people. Just like the beer industry. You're always trying to educate folks. You guys got any Budweiser here? We don't, sir. But we have this, you know, blonde ale that you might like. Or, you know, we just tapped this, you know, right, New Zealand pills. It's not necessary. You know, it's what can you do to just get the hook in them, right?
Exactly.
Or teach them something. Or sometimes you're just like, screw you, man. Just take this beer. I'm sick of it. We don't have any whiskey. You know, so I don't even know where I was going with that one.
We're talking about finding
educating people.
Educating people, yes.
I got all worked up like it's behind the bar doing taster flights. And so what I come to find out is not many people wanted to buy the book. We'll get to that, but people wanted to buy Lon Jäger. It's one of two camps. It's people that are fiercely loyal to it and have been eating it their whole lives. Have made it, have had their venison processed into it, or they've never heard of it in their entire life. They're from out of state, or they're from in state, and they just never stumbled upon the joys that is Lon Jäger. And so I teach them about it.
Definitely.
And what I say is, for folks that don't know what Lon Jäger is, it is a cured, fermented, smoked, and dried sausage snack. The curing process is basically, you know, you're going to add that to kind of fend off the growth of any dangerous bacteria.
Right.
It's kind of like a the perimeter of the wall around the castle. You know, just kind of fending it off. At the same time, you're going to put in a starter culture. Very, very in line with how a Berliner Weiss is made. You're going to put this culture in.
Okay.
You're going to let it do its magic. As that culture builds up off the sugars that you've added, it's going to create more and more lactic acid. And once that lactic acid gets to a certain level, the cure's done its job, and now the lactic acid's strong enough that it's going to overpower all the dangerous bacteria that can exist.
Okay.
So that pH is probably going to get to around 5.3.
It's fairly acidic.
Fairly acidic. Yeah. That's why you'll notice in the pear I brought you, there's a little twang to it.
Yep.
Not
lactobacillus that's doing the work here?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's, again, very much like the beer industry. There's several different kinds of starters. There's like, you know, it's highly geek-worthy, right?
Yes.
And it's always coming along. We've got a company here in Wisconsin. They're international, but like Christian Hansen, and they're always like modifying things you can do. There's business after business after business that's really working to, people always picture meat processing as this big monster, and it's true. There are four big corporations that are totally monopolizing the market. I'm very anti, you know, big corporation.
Yep.
But there's a lot of companies doing a lot of good to help the regional, mid-size, and smaller producers make a better product.
Okay.
So you got your starter culture, you got your pH where you want it. At this point, what you've done is you've pumped out what looks like a brat. You've got your batter made, which is your mixture of meat.
Yep.
You've added your starter culture, your cure, your spices, and you put that into the stuffer, and you've got what comes out as a brat. And then you can either do it one, three ways I've seen it done. There's a machine that Bavaria Sausage and Zuber's down in Monroe has, and it's basically made specifically for Landjager production.
Okay.
So Zuber's is pretty much a Landjager company. They do some brats and other things, but they're pretty much Landjager focused, which is rad. Bavaria just cranks out Landjager, so they got the machine as well. And that's who we have here today. And then you can also, there's like wooden blocks, and that's how they've done it in the old world, where they kind of form them, set them down, flatten them, put like, I don't know, back in the day, probably wood, but nowadays like plexi over it.
Yep.
Or you can put them in kind of like, what is it called? It's like a ham tub. And so it's
interesting.
You know, like a deep set stainless steel bowl.
Sure.
And you kind of set them down. You flatten it with like a plexi cover, another layer of it. Flatten it down, another layer, flatten it. And then you basically put like vices around it. And you keep it tight.
Yep.
And so by putting it in that shape and leaving it in that shape while the fermentation's taking place, don't ask me what's happening, but something's happening in the proteins there that's forming this like matrix to keep it in this very unique shape.
Yes.
And so once it's hit its pH, it'll go in the smoker.
Okay.
If it's at a certain pH and it hits a certain water activity in the drying step, it's shelf-stable. It should be, by all standards, a shelf-stable product, good to eat without refrigeration.
Yep.
A lot of times here in the States, folks will do a cook step in the smoker just to ensure either to their inspectors or themselves that it's also hit that step.
Totally.
And I think that's around 160, or it's like lower temp for longer. You know, I think each product, based on its diameter, how big of a ring it is, it'll either go for slower, longer, or hotter, quicker. And so then you take it out, you're going to dry it. Once it gets to the AW, I forget, don't quote me, I hope my old boss isn't listening, I want to say like 0.97 of water activity, then it's deemed by the inspectors shelf stable.
Safe. Yeah.
So you can either at that point throw it on your display case. Most places are just going to vacuum pack them, or you can just start eating them out of your pocket.
Definitely.
But the thing is, and I tell people this, is it's literally can last forever. Like, the only thing that can go wrong with your Landjager, you can do some really weird stuff with it. If you're like dipping it in paint, don't eat it. You know?
Right.
If you're rolling it around in the gutter, don't eat it. But if you've got a pair of Landjager that you've treated well, it's in a display case, or it's in a vacuum pack, it'll be here when the world ends, because there's truly nothing that can go wrong with it. The only thing you can do to damage your Landjäger is if you take, say you get a six pack of it, or you just get a couple of them, and you put it back in that pack, and you put it in the fridge, condensation is going to create within that environment, and that's where the mold will come into play. Sometimes the vacuum packs will get loose, and they'll get a pin poke in them, and mold will develop. If you have Landjäger, and there's a tiny bit of mold, or if it's a white mold to any degree, you can basically just mix vinegar and water and wipe it off, because the mold doesn't go inside. It can only grow on the surface level.
Okay.
Just like any of those Italian salamis you've seen, stuff like that. So yeah, don't be too scared of the mold. But if you do like see a pack and you buy it and it's got mold in it, feel free to be like, hey guys, this is not right. But that's pretty much the only issue with Landjäger. So like even the one I brought you, I put it in a vacuum pack.
Let's take a look here.
If I was gonna see you in 3 days, I wouldn't have done this. I would have let it sit out, air dry, and therefore given you a better Landjäger experience. So the one you have here is from Bavaria Sausage in Fitchburg.
Smell coming out of this already is incredible.
It's incredible, man. When you open like one of those six packs, your entire kitchen will smell like it. I heard stories from the producers how they'd have dogs chasing them down the streets because they all just smelled of meat and smoke.
I bet, yes.
I also brought you the Pfeffer version, which is made with Brazilian red and green peppers.
Oh, fun. Okay.
And so this is a yummy dig in.
Let's
brother.
Get into it, yeah.
Yeah. I know I should have dried it out longer for you.
That's all right. I'm just going to take a bite out of it.
Nosh it.
I hope we got that snap, that crunch on the
Yep. This one's all beef. Usually it's going to be a blend of pork and beef. Why they do all beef, I don't know. The only other one I know that does all beef in our area is Hosley.
Okay.
But this one, you kind of get the heat, but not over the top. It actually outsells the traditional and through my distribution channels.
Okay.
But the flavor is... it's incredible. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of sweetness. There's a lot of umami going on in my mouth right now.
Yeah.
And there's just the salt complements it all. It kind of just elevates it all, makes it all a little brighter.
Yeah.
It's not overly salty. But the spice blend in here, the touch of smokiness.
Yep.
The texture is great. It's like chewy. You have to work at it, but it's not like you're chewing on hard leather either. It's like approachable.
It's like celery. You're almost burning more kale through the chewing.
Totally.
You know?
And then it really just makes me thirsty to take another sip of beer. So
another sip of beer?
Yes.
Or if, conveniently, when I'm working an event and I haven't eaten all day, I can crush some Landjäger, get my quick fuel. I get my quick protein, surge.
Oh, yeah.
Do like 3,000-4,000 push-ups and drink another beer. It's pretty much the perfect snack. I say this without an ounce of hyperbole. I've never, unless someone's like, I don't eat meat or I don't like sausage, I've never, ever had somebody say they don't like Landjäger. I've had so many times where I've been at an event and someone comes over and goes, what's this? Landjäger, it was like jerky. It's like every event, most every 15th conversation is this. Well, I go through the whole spiel of how it's different. You know what? They humor me. You poor little man selling your fake jerky. I'll take one.
Sure.
And I can't tell you how many times guys, partner, friend, somebody comes literally running back. What the fuck was that? That's the best thing I've ever eaten. Give me six of those. This happens almost every time because it's unlike.
It's so unique.
If you're at home, it's probably the closest thing I can compare it to is like a craft-made Slim Jim.
Yeah.
Little less Macho Man, a little more craft. Which I don't know if that's better, because I love Macho Man.
I think this is better. This is better than Slim Jim.
Yeah, it is better than Slim Jim. But that's kind of what it's like if you're trying to explain it to folks, because they'll picture a brat, it's not that. Picture jerky, it's not that. This is probably the Bavaria one we're looking at here is probably average size. You get a Zubers out of Monroe again. You get a Hosley. out of New Glarus, they're going to be super girthy, big biters. Mm-hmm. They get more fatty. The Hosley one's definitely got, you can almost squeeze the fat out of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that fat really does carry the flavor for sure. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's their best. There's Gempler's in Monticello that I mentioned. Theirs almost has like a yellow curry flavor to it. Zuber's, I mentioned them a couple times, but they do a traditional, they do a Cajun, they do an Italian, and they also do a Door County Cherry, which seems like it would be like just a gimmick, but something about that savory versus the sweet with that umami, it is decadent. It is so freaking good.
Absolutely, yes.
So that's kind of the basis of what Landjager is. The reason it's so popular, here's the interesting thing. You would think, and I've always thought, that it's so popular in our area because we're Wisconsin. There's a few Germans here.
Just a few.
We all know that Greene County is a lot of Swiss, right? New Glarus seems touristy, and it is touristy, but there's a lot of genuine Swiss people and Swiss culture there. When I went and started researching the new book that I'm working on, I was out in Sheboygan, and there was articles about rare sausages, and every one of them referred to Landjager as a Swiss treat.
Interesting.
So I think it's here and popular because of the German population, and I'm not German. There's a love of sausages of all types.
Yep.
But the reason I think it's so special in Greene County in particular is because of that Swiss population. And the cool thing is the Landjager you're eating at Hosley's now is a recipe that he kind of learned from his dad. His dad got that recipe from working at a shop called Strickler's that existed in New Glarus.
Okay.
Same with Roof's in New Glarus closed. It's now Buell's Bristle Pig in Monroe.
Okay.
So if any of you folks are driving into Monroe, underneath the overpass, and there's the Welcome to Monroe sign on 69 there. Right across the street is Buell's Bristle Pig. Mm-hmm. First guy I interviewed for the book, Chris Hessling, salt of the earth. He's like Pip at Meat People, where he's a chef that transitioned into the meat side of things.
Yeah.
So he brings that chef's element into his sausages rather than the other way around. Mm-hmm. And he's just a genius. But the Landjager he makes is a tweak of the Roof's one, and the Roof's one was a tweak of the sausage shop that came before it that I think, and I don't, you know what, I don't know how many were there before, but that place was open as a sausage shop, I want to say 1910-ish, 1910 to 1920, so you're eating a time capsule,
though
you've had to change things, maybe you've had to add a starter culture into the mix to satisfy the evolution of food inspection. This is a recipe that could have been around 100 years ago.
Yeah. Or even at the very least, very similar.
Yes.
Right? Like the base, raw, you know, scaffolding of that recipe.
Yep.
That's incredible.
And you don't see that much. You don't see restaurants. I guess you read about, like, places in Japan that are 1,000 years old. Mm-hmm. But even if a brewery took over for another brewery, it's going to be rare that they're going to keep making the same beers they made.
Right.
People want to kind of create their own thing.
Yep.
So you don't see this much, and even in the time since I wrote the book, which is about two and a half years ago now, I don't even know, Roof's closed. It's now like a boutique leather goods shop.
Okay.
He opened the Buell's Bristle Pig. I found out about a new place in Judah that somehow in a year of research plus, no one told me about this spot down called, I don't know if it's Rakow's or Rakow's. Me and Tony went there. Zuber's has talked about transitioning ownership. Bavaria Sausage has changed hands, and there's new ownership there.
Wow.
And the Meat Science and Nanobiologics Discovery Building, where I worked on campus, started making Landjager. So even in just that short of time, that many places have closed, started making Landjager, and like come onto the map. So we have to remember that, like, as we sit here and talk, this is a part of history. Mm-hmm. This podcast will be transmitted in the next NASA mission to find life in the rings.
Put it on the golden record and send it to
put
space.
It on the golden record. But like, and when you have people come up to you, I think the mark when I was most happy about was I was nervous
to be writing about family histories for these folks that were very proud of what they did, mm-hmm. their whole livelihood was what they did, and here I am putting it in a book, and hopefully I'm capturing the right. Having been interviewed a lot of times, it's almost 9 times out of 10 they're going to screw up a quote from you, they're going to say a fact wrong about your business,
sure.
they're going to do something incorrect, and I want to do my best to get that info is exactly right as
sure.
possible.
You want to do them justice, yeah.
And to have really cute old Swiss ladies come up to me and say, this book is like a gift to Greene County, like that means a lot.
That's, wow.
Right? Because like, thank you.
Yeah.
So much, because that... I literally thought I'd sell 5 copies of the book. I like literally thought I'd sell 5 because who's going to read it?
Sure.
I am, but like, and I got buddies from my beer buddies in Colorado are buying it. I got friends from New York buying it. I got a random order from Honolulu for 2 books the other day.
Right on, yeah. That's rad.
I've sold 5. I don't make any money on the display cases. I try to give it all to Heinz because he's the best guy in the world. But like, we've sold 5 of those in the last 2 months. And like, it's all, I'm not trying, they're just like sitting on the website, so like it just goes to show people are looking it up, and
people
are like trying to find out about Landjäger. It's nuts.
Yeah,
you
I
know
mean, it's a super unique product. It's I mean it makes a lot of sense, and I think people, especially in the last like decade and a half, more people are interested in locally sourced things, the processes behind the things we eat and drink in general, and I think this really fits into that mold of like people are like, yeah, I can see, I'm interested, and I can see why others are interested.
Yep, and I think it goes back to the cases, what we were talking about. So what kind of happened was Tony, coincidentally, this wasn't actually planned, Tony here at Barley Pop, Tone Bone, goes, we're thinking about selling Landjäger. And he's like, can you help me out? And I said, I don't know, Tone, like, I don't even know what that would entail. I don't know what I would charge. I don't know if they'd let me. And then Starkweather opened, and I worked with Tom G at Working Draft.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much all of our friends in this town are some orbit of Working Draft. It's another
the
reason I love it
pedigree.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, man. It's great. It was such an excellent place to land when we first moved here. And so I said, okay, I got 2 people, and I thought about doing it, but I just didn't know. So started with those 2 and started like getting random inquiries here or there. At that point, I was still kind of reaching out to people, and so the Muskie came on board.
Ah, okay.
Robin Room. So now we work with Barley Pop, Starkweather, Youngblood on North Street, Old Fashioned, though I haven't talked to them in a long time, hit me up. Starkweather, Garth's actually just came on board,
yes,
representing
sir. Yep.
the West Side.
Yep.
Thank you, Garth. Black Rose, representing yep. West Side. Love
Kyle,
you, Kyle.
Kyle's great, yeah.
He's another just badass part of this industry, and a great part of the Madison scene.
Yes.
And now a pinball wizard from
oh,
whatever.
Oh, yeah, true. He's got, what, 4 or 5 machines, I think, in there? Yeah.
I walk in the other day. I was making a drop. He was watching YouTube videos on how to get better at a particular game.
Sure.
Of course, those videos exist. Mm-hmm. Had no idea. Muskie, as I said, like that's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Duh. Robin Room, which blows my mind and blows other people's mind. It's probably one of my busiest accounts. They probably
really?
Go through some of the most. You would think it would be a little slower.
I guess maybe people are like, okay, we're going to Robin Room for a nice cocktail.
Yep.
And I just want like a snack, right? Like
a little snack.
So I could see
but
that.
It's so Wisconsin. That's
yeah,
why we're
right?
so cool. We're yeah. like making some of the best cocktails, and we happen to have like a smoked meat snack, and like
right.
there's no pretension there. People
yeah.
are just noshing.
Yeah.
You know? The Wedge also just came on board.
Yep.
Over here in Atwood. Jacob, awesome guy. Love what he did with the place. Also modeled his place after Baumgartner's down in Monroe.
Oh, neat. Okay. Cool.
Which obviously
the
a legendary
stinky,
spot.
Yeah, Baumgartner's is the stinky, what's the cheese?
Limburger
cheese. Limburger. Yes, yeah.
So he's got his own sandwich
yeah.
over there.
Yep.
I try to give that cheese. It's just so,
it's a special kind of cheese for a special
so
kind
moany.
Of person.
It is. And then Working Draft, OBS, they're ripping through it. And then Sahala. I don't know if you...
Yes.
Yes, you did.
Matt.
Yep,
yeah.
exactly.
Great dude.
He is. Him
yeah.
and I worked together at Avery.
Oh.
yes, okay, that's his car. No kidding. Wow,
yep.
The world is a small, small
it's
place.
It's a small
you
place.
You just blew my mind.
And then there's also Inventors Brew Pub. That gentleman was brewing in Colorado at the same time.
Okay.
We were there as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been lucky enough to do a couple collabs with Hoff. We did a Caraway Keller beer. A Lond beer, I should say.
Yes.
And that was really fun. What did we do after that? We did a German pale ale.
Okay, sure.
Really, I kind of took inspiration from Goldfinger. They had done a collaboration along
okay.
those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're talking, me and the Hoffmeister are talking about doing smoked pils.
Oh, yes. I'm
yeah.
here for smoked beers. I don't know if that's trending yet or not, but I feel like I'm seeing more and more of it here and there, and I'm here for it. A smoked
yep.
beer is a wonderful thing.
You know what's funny is when we opened Call to Arms, we had a handle firmly dedicated to smoked beer. It was even it was a brick, and we called it the Chimney. It was only going to be smoked beer.
Yep.
Never sold.
That's disheartening.
People would hear smoke, and they'd run for the hills.
Sure.
And if they tried it, if you'd get it in their hands, wow, that's really cool. That's way better than I expected.
Right.
But here, it's just, there's no explanation for it, but Clint has made so many smoked beers since he opened.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back when I was behind the bar, we would rip through smoked beer. And even nowadays, when it was the Blue Plume or whatever,
yeah.
or other smoked beers,
yeah.
they rip.
Yes.
And I don't know if people are just more willing to try it here, if people's palates are just different here than Colorado. Colorado, it's hard to put Colorado in a nutshell, though, because it's not like here. It's not like New York. Everyone, for the most part, is a transplant.
Right.
So there's no, like, homogenous taste there.
True.
You know? So I can't explain it. But I'm with you. I'm a smoked beer junkie.
Yeah.
We need more of it in this world. I wanted to go to Dovetail's, like, smoked fest they had.
Yeah, I talked about being at Dovetail and where they had the Cabanos, and they had four different smoked beers on tap. And the gentleman behind the bar, thank you again. He was so kind to give us a little, like, kind of flight of the four
yep.
different smoked beers. And it was wild to go through the progression. He lined up. He's like, this is least smokiest to our, like, campfire smoke.
Totally.
But, like, they were all so unique and different. I mean, you could really appreciate the differences behind
totally.
Each individual smoked beer, not just like the base style underneath, but like the amount of smokiness, the kind of smokiness, like it was just, I blew my mind.
Yep. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it'll wreck your palate.
It can, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you be warned. Yeah.
You be warned.
Yeah.
It's, I think of all beers, that's one to definitely be cautious about
mm-hmm.
lower levels. I definitely would say I've been disappointed that a beer doesn't have an... I would far prefer a smoke bomb than nuanced, personally.
Sure.
Depends on the style. I don't want the Pilsner that we're going to make to be a smoke bomb.
Right.
But if I'm, like, looking for a nice smoked beer, I want it to, like, punch me in the face sometimes, you know? I hear whispers that Clint's working on another smoked beer collaboration right now.
I could have sworn I saw a smoked beer, not, like, named, but... on their anniversary party, which is coming up, that there might be a smoked beer.
I think
drop
you're
that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that one's different even.
Different even? Okay.
Yeah.
So he's got a couple of smoked beers down the pipeline.
I think this
okay.
one is different even.
Mm-hmm.
Another place, totally off the smoke thing, but another place in this town that I absolutely adore and I've been trying to do a collab with is the folks at Full Mile.
Oh, okay.
They are absolutely ripping it up there.
Yes.
Their lager game is some of the best in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Their brewer's got this incredible pedigree. And so, like, between them and the draft, like, we're very lucky to have these very smart brewers.
Yes.
I tried to get Landjager, Full Mile. I tried to get Landjager out there, but they got a whole kitchen.
I know, yeah.
Maybe one of these days they'll let me in there. But, yeah, man. It's been great. It's been super organic. I've tried to just let the accounts that want to carry the Landjager.
Yeah.
And like Garth, he's placed his fourth order already because it's just...
Oh, it's awesome. It's great to hear.
It's an inexpensive snack for the most part. It's something you can give the kiddos.
Yeah.
It's something you can nosh yourself. It's not a full commitment to a pizza or like a burger or something like that.
Very
it
true.
Like really fits the bill for these breweries that don't have a full kitchen
mm-hmm.
to operate, you know?
Totally
so,
agree.
Yeah, that's
beautiful.
That's the meat of it.
Yeah, that's the yeah. Well said.
Thanks, man.
Jesse, it's been an absolute blast. absolute pleasure to have you on, and I've learned a lot, and I think hopefully this excites people that if they're listening to this for the first time and they've never heard of Lon Jaeger before themselves, that they pique their intrigue and they get out there and find it for themselves and learn more about it. It's a fantastic product.
Yeah, man, and I'm here to rep. Here's the thing: when I was working at breweries, I got frustrated that a lot of people who had never thrown a tri-clamp, who had never put the boots on and got the gangrene, mm-hmm. were being considered experts, right? Mm-hmm. So when I do the Lon Jaeger thing, I always want to point out that I'm not the one making it. I'm not the one waking up in the early morning, dealing with the cold conditions. These producers all throughout Wisconsin, all throughout the country, that are making these meat products, is a ton of hard work. Ton of hard work. You got Chris Hessling's wife down at the Green County Locker just down the road from Buell's. She's breaking down full cow. Like, she's busting her ass in there.
Wow.
It's a ton of work that goes into what we snack on here. So, support your local meat shops. They don't make a ton of money. They do work their tails off, just like your craft brewers. Like, it can just as easily go to a Pick and Save or a store and buy brats there.
Yep.
But like, if you're gonna get brats, maybe get them at Jenny Street Market.
Yeah.
Get them over at Meat People. Buy them down at Ken's. Get them at these local meat shops, because they're typically as well priced and they're superior, and you can talk to the guy who made them.
Yes.
You know?
And that's special. That's
it is
nice.
Special. And it's special that, like, we know the people that are eating these Lon Jaeger, and it's special the connections you make with these people, and you're helping, you're leaving, getting a badass meat product, maybe some curds, maybe some jelly, but you're also, like, supporting your local community and your local business people. So I can't say that enough, you know?
Definitely.
Next time you're going to get brats at festival, go to the local meat shop.
Yeah.
Support them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about Lon Jaeger, Instagram, we got Wisconsin Lon Jaeger, mm-hmm. pretty basic. And we got Karate Fight Publishing is our website.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We initially started doing children's books, and now we did the Lon Jaeger book, but we also sling yeggs on there.
Mm-hmm.
Just check these things out. Always hit me up with questions, folks. I love talking meat, mm-hmm. as you can tell. I think I'm, like, sweating. I'm so excited by this. Maybe it's just Tony giving me that twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it's fun. And just, like, the people you meet in beer and meat, they're excellent. They care, and they love sharing the things that they care about, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the passion that you're putting on right now, it's got to be palpable coming through the microphone for the people that are listening to this episode. So
yeah,
if that's not selling it for you, I don't know what is.
It's true, man. It's true. It's really easy to get behind. Mm-hmm. So
definitely. Well, yeah. Thank you again, Jesse.
Thank you.
I can't wait to maybe. I mean, I think we just scratched the surface today, but maybe we'll have to have like an updated episode down the road here, and we can talk more about sausage and Lon Jaeger, and I mean, it's all good stuff.
Well, and my friends at the Historical Society Press would hate me if I didn't say I'm currently working on a book for mm-hmm. the Wisconsin Historical Society Press.
There we go.
On the complete history of sausage in the state of Wisconsin. So I was very lucky. I originally pitched the Lon Jaeger book to them. They said, that's cute, but no. It was also during the pandemic, but yeah. I hit them up again. And I said, hey guys, this book actually is pretty popular. We sold like 400 copies of it, which is weird. And they said, let's talk. And oddly enough, nobody. Even though there's literally books about the fairs here in Wisconsin, there's books about gas stations here, there's 1,000 about cheese, there's 1,200 about beer, nobody had written one about sausage.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Wisconsin? What do you think of? Packers, beer, cheese, brats.
Yeah.
And someone didn't write this book. So I was very lucky to be given this opportunity. 3 months into the research now. I've got about 1 year left.
Okay.
My deadline's beginning of March of next year. And so we're hoping down the road to have this comprehensive history of all, and sausage is just the story, but the background is the shops, the families,
definitely.
The people along the way, the history of it. So
okay. So would you anticipate if you wrap up the project just in time, March, it'd be out and published by then, or would it still be?
Sadly, no.
No, it'd take a little
probably
more time.
Probably not until 2026.
2026 for publishing,
so,
okay.
A little ways out.
For sure.
But
that's exciting stuff, though. It's still exciting.
yeah, I'm excited to keep sharing the sausage love, you know, with you and everybody else.
Well, thanks again. I think that'll wrap it up here for us today. Obviously, Jesse already gave his social media plugs, his website plug. So if you want to reach out to him, maybe that's how him and I connected. He's very open, very willing to talk. So feel free to send him a message on his Instagram, or you know, any other way you find a way to contact him. But
yep,
I'll make a post about this episode, as I do with all my episodes, on my Instagram at Buzz with Brian. Of course, if you have any questions for me, or if you're like, hey, I just can't figure things out and I want to get in touch with Jesse, feel free to shoot me an email, buzzwithbrian@gmail.com. Happy to point you in the right direction. My podcast friends out there that maybe have a spot that they know Lon Yager could be placed in and interested in,
yep,
happy to make the connection. So feel free to reach out in that regard too. But can't wait to get back on the mic again soon here. And I guess enjoy a couple more beers and some Lon Yager.
I'm so ready to have another beverage with you, brother.
Cheers, beers.
Cheers, my friend. Thank you so much.